Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously. This is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
How the hell did we get Kevin Smith to introduce our shitty little podcast, guys? All right, for Kevin's.
I told him that we had tens of listeners, and he was intrigued.
Oh, well, tens of listeners, so you up the numbers a little bit. Way to lie to, you know, our Lord and Savior, Kevin Smith.
I've been saying it right from the beginning. Tens of listeners can't be wrong.
Well, welcome everybody once again to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, coming to you from beautiful downtown Boston, as are my good friends Joshua Opper.
Howdy.
And is my good friend Tommy Boucher.
Hello.
And from the desert moon that is Louisiana is our good friend Mike Manning. Mike Manning, how's everything going down there?
It's going fabulous. I thought we were doing weird voices. Sorry.
We're not doing weird voices. We're just being weird.
I'm doing a weird voice all podcast.
So today on the podcast, we can do weird voices or underwater voices that we want because we're talking about our favorite punching bag, Arthur Curry, better known as Aquaman. Aquaman has kind of a kind of an up and down history. Some people love him. Some people hate him. He always was kind of a joke in a lot of other medias. And to give us a little bit of a background, it's going to be our good friend Josh Opper. Josh, tell us all about Aquaman.
So Aquaman, surprising to me, was there in the Golden Age, more fun comics in 1941. He initially was just breathing underwater, control fish, the typical Aquaman. And then he started to ramp up in the Silver Age, and he jumped into adventure comics. My particular favorite point in his career was sometime in the mid-50s, he had an octopus sidekick named Topo. Why would you ever get rid of an octopus sidekick named Topo? But somehow Topo doesn't make it into the modern day and age where Aquaman gets included in the Justice League, actually as one of the founding members of the team, and continues his adventures with them right up through modern times. And also now with the new 52, he's right there at the start of the Justice League as well.
Well, that was a great brief history of Aquaman. Now let's all talk about some of our favorite things Aquaman has done. Mikey, what's your favorite Aquaman memory?
I really like Geoff Johns, what he did with Aquaman in the new 52. The first four issues called The Trench kind of established Aquaman. He took the whole trope that Aquaman is a joke and flipped it on its side. There was a lot of humor, not on Aquaman's part, but on all the characters interacting with him. I thought it was very good, and it actually kind of established Aquaman as a badass in the DC universe. That whole run that Geoff Johns did was great. When Colin Bunn took over, kind of wasn't really as popular, and it almost got canceled, but somehow it's managed to survive.
Tommy, what's your favorite Aquaman time?
Well, I was never really into DC Comics that much, so I am woefully ignorant in the Aquaman section. But I did like what they did with the character on Batman the Brave and the Bold animated cartoon. I thought that was a fantastic rendering and probably the most likable rendering of Aquaman. Other than that, I kind of liked when people made fun of him. I mean, South Park with the Seaman and Swallow, I thought that was hilarious. But those are my two favorite Aquamans.
All right. Well, Josh, how about you?
Clearly, ever since Topo the Octopus got the cut, I'm not sure I've been able to – I've really had to struggle to stick with Aquaman. But seriously, I've always liked the character maybe a little more than everybody else. And I always felt bad when he really took it on the chin from, SNL and South Park, the other heroes, even though those skits – are absolutely hilarious. I like the retelling in the new 52, and I am kind of sad that maybe that storyline isn't going to continue. I think I have to side with Mike here, as that really sort of brought him back and made him look like a premium player rather than a sit on the sidelines kind of guy.
I agree with that. Actually, I like the hook hand. I like the improved abilities in the video game. In Justice League, Aquaman really comes off as kind of a hard person to fight. He at one point gets to attack you riding a giant shark. That's awesome, right? Who else can just attack you while riding a giant shark? That's pretty bad. My favorite Aquaman, though, there was one, and I had a lot of trouble finding it. It was back in the 1960s where a supervillain dumps him off in the desert. And instead of using his strength, instead of using his powers, he has to use his wits and his brains to escape the desert, despite the fact that all his powers are aquatic-based. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find the exact issues. I was only able to find some panels from that. So I guess instead of just talking about that eloquently, I will talk about Aquaman from The Brave and the Bold. Now, that was a fun Aquaman. He was outrageous! Nobody else liked that Aquaman?
I love that Aquaman. I thought he was great. I thought
you guys all left me hanging there.
Character that had kind of always been given the short straw of tasks and made him not only likable but just totally and completely crazy.
Now I know
enthusiasm.
I know we give LT a lot of garbage for not listening to our podcast, but LT just talked about Aquaman on The Brave and Bold. You're not even listening to our podcast while we're doing it, man.
I'm sorry, I have a very bad connection, and I'm only hearing about half of what you guys say. My apologies,
LT.
We
love you, Tom.
Thank you. See, I can take criticism, you bunch of...
Just not well.
At least you're
just
so down you're
not
talking.
Well. Thank you. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box for me?
All right, at the front of the long box, I got DC Universe's Rebirth number one. At first, I was a little hesitant, thinking, all right, this is not going to be good. They're going to reboot the DC Universe all over again. But after reading the first issue, I am digging it a lot. It reintroduces Wally West as Kid Flash. And we find out that the events of Flashpoint were manipulated and 10 years were lost. And it looks like it's pointing to, dun, 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 Dr. Manhattan has been manipulating the universe, making everybody weaker. So they're now incorporating the Watchmen into the DC universe. Very excited about that.
That is kind of exciting. I've always wanted to see more Watchmen in play.
Well, speaking of Tommy and beginning things in play, what do you got in the back of the long box for me?
I'm not going that far back. I'm going to talk about a series that came out in October 2013 and is still going. It's Letter 44. The premise of this series is that a newly elected president, his first day in office, he goes into the Oval Office and there's a letter from the previous president. And the letter basically states that there are aliens. The aliens are outside of, or within our solar system, and they're doing something, but we don't know what, and that we've sent people up into space to investigate what's going on, and we're also preparing for an invasion or a war with aliens, all secretly. And basically, the former president had started the Gulf War and also the Wall Street crash so that he could divert tons of money under the radar to secret projects involving aliens that are doing something to an asteroid belt in our solar system. And it is a fantastic read.
Well, that sounds like one I want to pick up. I'm going to talk briefly on social justice issues, and today I want to talk about a really fun comic I just found called Brother Power, The Geek. Does anyone remember this comic book?
Yeah, that was like in the 1960s. He's a weird
dude. Yeah, 1968.
He had Grant Morrison loves to use him in different comics. He's appeared in some of Animal Man, I think.
Oh, terrific. I'm going to have to go look those up because, to my knowledge, he'd only appeared in his own couple of comics and then one or two cameos. So if there's more, I'd love to read those. The Geek, Brother Power the Geek, is a mannequin that is brought to life after some hippies dress a mannequin up in their wet clothes after they had been beaten up by some police and some biker gangs. Lightning strikes the side of the building, spilling some chemicals. Nobody knows how, but Brother Power the Geek is brought to life. He has, he's a living mannequin, so the extent of his powers is really kind of unknown. Is he immune to damage? He's not even sure. He doesn't really feel pain. He has some electrical powers, but that doesn't come into play too much. He seems to be just a little bit stronger than the average person and just a little bit more and more resilient than the average person. And he's a great, interesting character if you want to look at how mainstream writers were looking at hippie culture and how hippie culture was demonized. The Geek and Brother Power the Geek epitomized hippie culture and the best of, but at the same time, they made fun of the hippies around him. In one Telltale panel, they talk about how Brother Power the Geek wasn't lazy like the other hippies. He savored life and wanted to enjoy it. He didn't destroy his mind with drugs. He got high on life. So in one way, they're trying to, you know, show the hippies are human. And another way, they're still trying to show that the hippie culture is something to be scorned. It's a great read and very telling about how people were kind of thinking about the hippies. Josh, what do you have for a tangent this week? Anything fun?
Well, LT was talking about aliens, so I'm going to swoop out of the solar system here and go straight for the new Predator movie. Now, the new Predator movie has been put in the hands of Shane Black, who did Iron Man 3, but he also wrote some of the Lethal Weapons, The Long Kiss Goodnight, and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which were all better than Iron Man 3. Now, originally, everybody thought this was going to be a reboot of the franchise, but he has confirmed that no, it is going to be sit alongside the current canon for Predator and fit into the history. Also, I just have to say, Shane Black was in the original Predator movie. He was the soldier on Arnold Schwarzenegger's team with the big goofy glasses. So what do we think about the life of the Predator movies and Predator himself?
I think this is a great idea. I am really tired of constant reboots. I like that they're continuing the history along, so those of us who have been in it from the beginning can still continue to see our character. Well, I guess there's no really reoccurring characters, but the history of it continue.
Yeah. I've always liked Predator. I didn't think any of the movies were bad because I never thought any of the movies were supposed to be Academy Award winners. I thought they were supposed to be for me to sit in the movie theater and scream and yell, and that's what every Predator movie's been so far. Even that terrible one in the set in the city with Danny Glover. That was bad in a good way.
Oh, but didn't you freak out when they went on the ship and you saw that alien head?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Yeah. Everyone thought that was cool. That was cool.
And I kind of liked Alien versus Predator. I thought it was not as horrible as it could have been, especially considering how bad Alien 3 was. So I welcome this new movie, and I'm glad that they're continuing a series and once again not rebooting it to death.
All right. I think we're all in agreement on that one, actually. That's amazing to me. We hardly ever all agree on something like that. All right, well, that's just about all we have to talk about. Of course, we always want to get out on our plugs. Mikey, got anything cool to plug?
Yes, I would like to plug Space City Comic Con happening June 18th. So if you are in the Houston area, come by and see me and the comic book Femme Fatale as we talk about horrible, horrible stereotypes in comic books.
How about you, Tommy? What do you like to plug today?
I would like to plug ianlino.com, IanLeino.com, for Vera of fine t-shirts and geeky things. Also, Victor Dandridge at VantageInhouseProductions.com. You can find his work on the Kindergartians on Comixology and on his website. Fantastic comic for young children.
How about you, Josh? What do you have to plug?
I'm going to go with us. So if you guys would like to learn a little bit more on us, go to www.outsidethelongbox.com or find us on Twitter @TheLongBoxGuys.
I was going to plug us, so you kind of screwed me over. Thanks a lot, buddy. So instead, I'm going to plug one of my favorite guys out there, Xavier Woods at Xavier Woods PhD, well-known wrestler, geek, and also a video game enthusiast. Xavier Woods has been nice enough to visit me in my restaurant a couple of times, and he's just a real class act and a gentleman. So go look at Xavier Woods PhD or go to up, up, down, down at up, up, down, down on Twitter.
And I'd also like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our music. Listen to them at KirbyCracklemusic.com or pick up their tunes on iTunes or Bandcamp.
So who's our interview this week there, Mikey?
We have some clips from Kevin Smith's talk at the Yoga Hoser screening in New Orleans. I thought you guys would like to hear more from Kevin Smith. He's very entertaining. He's the modern-day Mark Twain.
I have two things. First of all, can I get a picture with you? And second thing is, what movie's next?
Next up is, Moose Jaws is supposed to happen next, which is the third in this trilogy, which is just Jaws, but with a moose instead of a shark. So we were supposed to start it in May, and our money didn't come together, but now we got a lead on a new source of money, so that's looking good and stuff. But it looks like it won't happen until the fall, which is totally cool, because in August I'm going to go shoot another episode of The Flash. I got to direct an episode of The Flash a couple months back, and it just aired like last month. It was two before the season finale, and it was such a good time. And oddly enough, I was kind of built for it. Like, generally speaking, I'm not a good shooter, but that I was. They didn't let me write the script, so that meant there was no danger of Flash calling someone a cocksmoker or something like that. So instead, I just wound up directing. And oddly enough, of everything I've done in the last, like, 22 fucking years, that's the thing that people have liked the most overall. Like, oh my God, good job. Even since the early days when they really liked me and stuff. So it was a strange experience and wonderful, and I owe it to Jay Muse. Jason Muse was the guy that turned me on to that show, which got me on to that show in the first place, just as a fan, just watching it, because he's a fan of all those Berlanti shows. He loves Flash, he loves Arrow, he loves now Legends of Tomorrow and stuff like that. So he's been watching CW for years. Jason Mewes, the world's biggest CW fan. Like, their demographic is 12-year-old girls and Jay Mewes. So for years he was like, you gotta watch fucking Arrow, man. It's awesome. They're doing Arrow. It's just like fucking Green Arrow, but it's just Arrow and shit. And he'd pull out this iPad. That's what he always has with him and shit. Slung like a gunslinger. And he showed me a clip of Arrow. And it was a scene where Stephen Amell has no shirt on and he's doing the salmon ladder thing. And so I was like, wow, that's pretty. He's very sexy. Then he showed me another clip, and Stephen Amell was shooting a bow and arrow with no shirt on. Then he showed me a third clip, also fucking shirtless. So I was just like, dude, I think you like this show for reasons you don't understand. And I started calling CW the Shirtless Boy Network and shit like that. So he was like, you gotta watch it, guys. And now I said, you watch it. And then they introduced Flash. He's like, you have to fucking watch it now. Flash is on it. You love Flash. And I was like, I watched the live-action Flash show in the 90s. I'm good. I've seen it and shit. And then one night he called me up, the night on the show, if you don't watch the show, it was season 2, probably episode 2 or 3, when they introduced at the tail end of the episode King Shark, which is one of the lamest comic book villains of all time. For those that don't know this world, it's just a shark with pants. That's it. Walks on land, can bite your fucking head off. And stuff. Works on the comic book page, but you would never try it in the real world. There'd be no point in shit. But they did on Flash, and I know that because fucking Jason called me up screaming one night, the night that it was on. I saw his message on the phone, his name came up on the phone, and he never calls. Like, Jason just, he lives around the block from me, so he just pops by. He's like Kramer, so he never really calls. So when I see his name, I'm like, fuck, something must be wrong or something like that with the kid or his wife and stuff. So I answer the phone. I was like, what's up? And he goes, turn on the TV fucking right now. Turn on the TV, hurry. And the last time he called and said those exact same fucking words was September 11th, 2001. So I fucking was like, oh my God, is it happening again? You know? And he's like, no, man, fucking King Shark's on Flash. And I was like, you fucking asshole. Like, I thought fucking ISIS was on our shores or something like that. He's like, who's she? I said, like, what the fuck, King Shark? He goes, King Shark is on fucking Flash, dude. Turn it on right now. He's picking him up by the neck. Oh, fuck, it's over. You missed it. And I was like, they did King Shark? I thought you said this was a good show. He goes, it is a good fucking show. They did King Shark. That's how good it is. I was like, dude, King Shark is like one of the lamest, man. Like, why would you even bother and shit like that? He goes, you should see it. It looks cool. And I went to Twitter to look it up. Somebody had screen capped it, and I saw a picture, which was fucking awesome. King Shark holding Flash. If you were ever going to do King Shark in the real world, they fucking cracked the code. I was like, holy shit, that's impressive, especially for that character. So I said, you know, honestly, I got to watch this fucking episode. Like, if this is what it looks like. It was kind of like that Smuckers thing. Like, with a name like Smuckers, it better taste like pussy or whatever the fuck. You know, in a world where they're doing King Shark, they must have a giant dick. So I was like, that's confidence. Let me watch it. So I watched the episode, and I fell in love with it. I was like, this is really good. It plays like a fucking issue of a comic book. So I went back, started watching the whole thing from episode one on. I binged it and stuff. Just disappeared for 3 days. And my wife is like, are you cheating on me? I'm like, yeah, with a speedster. Like, so I was binging the thing. And anytime I didn't understand something, because they'd reference shit happened on Arrow, I'd hit up Jason, because he's watched everything. So I'd text him and be like, dude, what the fuck's this thing they talked about? And he'd be like, oh, that happened in Starling City. That was on episode 12 of Arrow. And he'd fucking give you full detail and shit. It was pretty adorable. It was like my Sherpa. You know, through the show, and my wife just made fun of us because she's like, look at you two old ladies and your stories. What are Nikki and Victor up to this week? I was like, fuck you, bitch, this is a series, this is The Flash. I fell in love with the fucking show hardcore, and by the end of the first season, Jason was like, you gotta shoot yourself watching the final episode. I said, why? He goes, because it almost made me cry, and I don't cry at anything. He's going, but you cry at everything. So I would love to see you cry at this. It was really good. I was like, all right. So I was watching the episode, and I was going to shoot myself, and then I was getting real emotional. I was like, fuck, all right. He asked me to. I'm going to do it. And I set up the camera. I shot myself, and I put the video up on the YouTube channel, my YouTube channel. I could actually see it, and it's not me rolling a single tear like a Native American who's looking at garbage going, fuck, you know. It's full-on bawling blubber, like my tits flopping up and down, hitting me in the eye, and shit. Just fucking bawling and shit. I looked real embarrassing on it. My mother, somebody had sent it to my mother, and my mother goes, oh, Tiger, she called me. She goes, Tiger, I saw you on a video on the internet, and you were crying, and I was like, which one? And she said, you were watching The Flash, and the boy's mom was dead. I said, yeah, I was a amazing episode of Flash, Ma. And she goes, Jesus, I hope you cry that much when I die. So it's clear I was a big fan. And Jason's wife, Jordan, runs our company. She's the one who runs Smodco and stuff. The only reason I'm standing here is because she's like, go here, go here. So Jordan called me up one day and she goes, I did something you're not going to like. I said, what? And she told me a story. The story she told me was she had called up my agent, TV agent, guy named Jordan. So girl Jordan called boy Jordan and said, hey, Kevin loves The Flash. Why don't you call up The Flash show and see if they'll let him direct an episode? Because he's been known to direct from time to time, and every once in a while, good. So see if they'll let him do it and shit. So boy Jordan called up Flash and was like, you guys know Kevin Smith? They're like, yeah, Dogma. I said, would you ever let him do an episode of the show? They're like, yeah, oh my God, totally. And it was that fucking simple. So Jordan called me up to be like, I called up boy Jordan, told him to call Flash, see if they'd let you direct an episode. And I was like, why the fuck would you do that? I was like, don't fucking do that. That's embarrassing. I don't want to fucking work for the Shirtless Boy Network and shit. I don't need no help. We're about to make Moose Jaws. Fuck their handouts. Don't ever fucking do that to me again. She goes, calm down. They said yes. I was like, got a girl. Well done. I was thinking outside the box. That's how we build this company. And Jason's in the background going, my old lady got you a job, bitch. You know? So I said, put him on the phone. He goes, I'm going with you. And I was like, dude, I just found out I got the job. I don't think I can call them up and be like, you got to hire the other guy, too. You know, or a fucking package deal or something like that. I was like, I just found out I'm getting the gig myself. He goes, I don't need to be in it. He's going, you just bring me up. I just want to go with you. I could be your assistant. And I was like, you kind of are my assistant. So I brought him with me to Vancouver. And he stayed with me in my room and shit. And they finally gave me the script when I got to Vancouver. That's where they shoot the show. And I was reading the script. And like halfway through the script, there's a scene where the villain of the week, who is a zombie girder, runs into a central citizen who's on a date and shit. And the character's name said Jay. So I was like, holy shit, I'm going to fucking fuck with his mind tonight and shit. Bring him the script and go, oh my God, dude, you have to fucking look at this. They wrote you into this episode. And I was like, give me that. He goes, oh my God, man. And I was like, I'm just fucking kidding. That ain't you. He goes, what do you mean? I didn't know it's not me. I was like, it says Jay. It doesn't say M Silent Bob. It's just fucking Jay. I was like, that's just a dude's name. He goes, you're a fucking asshole, man. So I went into the office the next day, and we were doing this tone meeting. That's where you go through the script with the people that are in Los Angeles. People in Los Angeles produce the show, write the show. People in Vancouver make the show. So they did these Skype meetings. You sit in front of fucking TVs and talk to each other. And shit. It's like the Jetsons. So the guys are going through the script. They're like, this scene's supposed to be this. This scene's supposed to be that. I was like, I got it. And then they get to the parking lot scene. They're like, okay, the zombie girder scene in the parking lot. They're like, this is kind of weird, but we're just going to go out and say it. We wrote your friend Jay into the episode. And I said, get the fuck out of here. So I was just rubbing in his face yesterday going, this is you, psych and shit. Like, are you serious? Why would you write him into the episode? And they go, we just assumed he'd be with you. And I was like, he is, actually. And they're like, do you think he'd want to do it? And I was like, do I fucking think he'd want to do it, man? He loves these fucking shows. I'm shocked he hasn't barged into your fucking office, pushed you back in your chair, whipped your dick out, and been like, who do I got to suck to be on the Flash? Goodbye horses with your cock and shit. And Andrew Kreisberg, the producer, goes, well, if I knew that was an option, I would have held out a little longer. He goes, you think he'll do it? I was like, oh, my God, yeah. See, this is a done fucking deal. You can trust me on this. It's just a formality, me asking him. But, yeah, consider it fucking done. So I went back to the hotel that night, and Muse was there. And I was like, hey, man. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, we just had our tone meeting. Went through the whole script with the producers. He goes, what was that like? I was like, remember that fucking scene where I was like, you're in the movie? And he's like, yeah, you're a fucking jerk and shit. I was like, dude, they did write you into the show. That is you. They fucking told me. They asked me to come ask you if you would do it and shit like that. Now, I've known Jason Mewes for almost 30 years at this point, and I've seen him cry twice in his life. Once, 1 year ago when his baby was born, Logan, she's 13 months now, I got a picture of him bawling, holding his kid. Only time I ever seen him cry. Second time I ever seen him cry in 30 years was when I was like, you're going to be on the CW. He just starts flooding his face and shit. He's like, I'm doing it. And he's a corny, quick part of the episode and shit. But like, anywhere, he's just like, that's my mom's car. But he fucking crushed it on set. He was fucking wonderful and stuff. And then we were done after that. It seemed to like 2 hours to shoot. And I felt bad because that was it. Like, everyone loved him on the fucking cast crew. They were taking pictures. And they're like, how'd you get him to say yes? And they were like, did you have to pay him a lot of money? And I was like, fuck no. In fact, he'll get you a coffee if you want. He's just fucking happy to be here, as you can see. So I crammed him into one more scene because we had one more scene to shoot like later in the day. And it was a scene where, like, we pan off, zoom the villain, and reveal a room full of metahumans. He's brought an army from Earth 2 to Earth 1. And it's just, like, 75 metahumans. They got powers and shit. Some have shit rods that light up. Some are flying and shit. So I was like, I could stick Jay in that scene. You know, as long as I put a mask on him, nobody will know. It'll be like, where's Waldo kind of shit. So I said, hey, man, I'm thinking about putting you in the show again in the last scene. He goes, you want my guy to come back? He goes, perfect. I'll come back in that scene. Then I could be on Arrow as my guy. Then I could be on Legends of Tomorrow as my guy. He was building himself a multi-episode arc. You know, where he'd just be like, that's my mom's car. And he's like, so I said, no, dude, you won't play that character anymore. We got to put a mask on you and shit. We got to put a suit on your costume. Otherwise, it would confuse people. So he's like, I get to wear a mask? I said, oh, yeah, shit. And I put him in a mask. He's in the shot. And you wouldn't recognize him, like, because you can't see his face and his body is kind of hidden by a costume. But you can't fucking miss him because there's 75 fucking metahumans. And Zoom goes, whose world is this? And they're all chanting, our world, our world. And Jay is the only metahuman in the group who's doing a Jersey fist pump while he does.
Hey, Kevin.
How are you?
I'm doing great. My name's Tony. Me and my buddy drive about 400 miles to see you here today.
From where?
Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Woo!
South of Memphis, Tennessee.
All right, well, now, having come that long way, I feel really fucking bad because this is the movie. How did it play, having driven that far?
Man, it was amazing. I really appreciate everything you did.
Are you sure not just, like, Phantom menacing it to yourself? You know? I remember when I saw Phantom Menace, I was like, it was amazing. And then 48 hours later, I was like, oh, no, it wasn't.
I don't think I'm having the Jar Jar effect. I really feel like the Jar Jar effect. But anyway,
I've had the Jar Jar career, sir.
No, have not. I really wanted to ask you two questions. One, could I get a handshake? And two,
absolutely.
Could I ask, is Michael Parks going to be coming back from his Jaws?
Michael Parks, the great Michael Parks, who was in Tusk, was supposed to be the bad guy in the third act, the Nazi who lived underground.
Ralph Garman's part.
But Ralph was actually going to play... the character that he played in Tusk was Detective Garman. Okay. He was going to come back when we met him again. He was the one that was bringing Gila Point to the girls in the interrogation room. And he had gotten a promotion. He's Commissioner Garman at that point. So, and Ralph loved that because he was like, I get to be Commissioner Garman. But Michael was going to be Archon, the guy underground. And when we shot, Michael had fallen very, very ill. Pretty badly. For a minute there, we didn't know if we were going to have him anymore. But he rebounded yet again. He's very, very feisty, strong, 70 years old, 71 at this point. But we couldn't get him in the movie. So at that point, I was like, Michael, there's Moose Jaws, don't worry about it. Like, I'm always making something, you'll be in it, don't worry. So we had nobody to play that part, and it wasn't written the way it is now with, like, him doing a bunch of impressions when it was Michael Parks as the character. It was very, like, fucking creepy, like old that old Carradine guy playing it like that. And Parks wanted to play it as Joel Grey from Cabaret. So he'll come in and shit like that. And he, I remember in rehearsals, he was very fey with it. It was wonderful. But he had a bad fight with cancer, and so we couldn't be like, dude, fucking come pretend that you're an old Nazi. You know, it's like, go deal what you've got to deal with and stuff. So I was like, what do we do? And I realized that, oh my God, I sit next to a guy every week, and when I do the Hollywood Babylon podcast, who from the moment I sat down with him, like the first episode of Babylon, love Ralph to death, but I'm not a big fan of impressions. Like, you know, it's just impressions are not my thing. Sounding like somebody is just not a thing for me. And Ralph is fantastic at it. But he's got five that he does all the time and stuff. And no matter where we go, I don't give a shit where I've been in this world, sitting next to him doing that show, whether it's in Los Angeles where we've sold out the show for 3 years straight, London, fucking Toronto, anywhere we bring that show, he does those impressions, people fucking die. It like breaks the room up. So I was like, you know what? Fuck it, man. It's a low-budget film. It's already got Bratzies in it. I can't fuck it up anymore. Like, let me take a shot, like, on Ralph. Like, and actually, the thought process was this. Johnny is friends with Al Pacino, so we knew we could get to Al Pacino, and Al Pacino probably would have done it because Johnny was like, hey, come out and play with me and the kid. So I was like, holy shit, I would get to fucking direct Al Pacino. That'd be amazing. But then I thought about it. It's like, I love Al Pacino, and Al Pacino's had a zillion shots. Ralph Garman has not had one shot. And if I hire Ralph, not only do I get Al Pacino, I get four other guys as well. So I was like, you know what? And I talked to the financiers, and I was like, my friend Ralph from the podcast, and they've been to Babylon. I said, if you guys don't give a shit, I'm going to rewrite the villain in the third act for him. And they were like, go for it, man. It was really kind of, it was wonderful. So I got to include him in a much bigger way. So he went from having, like, a few lines when he brought Johnny to the interrogation room as Commissioner Garman to being the Adrian Archon, to being the guy underground. So Parks was supposed to be that guy, wound up being Ralph. That left Ralph's role wide open. And that was, I was going to eliminate it altogether, but Jason Mewes begged me for that part. And it was because he was supposed to play the Bratzies himself. All of them were supposed to be him. It wound up being me, Silent Bob, not Jay. But he couldn't do it because the prosthetic work. He gets very fucking claustrophobic about the prosthetics. So I wound up having to step in and play the Bratzies instead. So we were almost done shooting, and he was like, dude, can I fucking be in it? I was like, you were supposed to be in it. You were the Bratzies, but we couldn't do it because of the prosthetics and shit in your face. And he was like, please, dude, I just want to act with Jump Street just once. And I was like, first off, don't fucking call him that. Out loud, shit. I it's like second, no, like there's nothing left. Like fucking we're this tomorrow's last day of shooting, we ain't got any extra parts or anything like that. And he's like, what about the part Ralph was gonna play? And I was like, well, cause I was gonna eliminate that altogether. Now that Ralph has played the other guy and shit, I was just gonna start the scene in the room with Guy LaPointe and the girls mid interrogation and cut some time there. And he's like, no, dude, let me bring. I could bring him to the room, dude. I just want to act with Jump Street once. I've watched every episode of Jump Street, even the ones that Jump Street's not in himself. Please. I was like, all right, I'll think about it and shit. And I went home that night, and I thought about, if you ever get a chance to make somebody's fucking dream come true, especially if it's within your doing and shit, like, do it. You know, you always give it a shot. Like, fucking... So... I knew what his fucking dream was because he said it one day, real unprompted, well, kind of definitely prompted, but like out of the blue, wasn't planned, real response. We were doing a Q&A. We took out the Jay and Silent Bob super groovy cartoon movie, and we were touring it, and afterwards we Q&A. Somebody asked Jason a question. They were like, if you didn't wind up being Jay in movies, what would you have done with your life? What did you most want to be? And without missing a fucking beat, man, as if he was waiting, like, his whole life for somebody to ask him the question, Jason leans into the mic and he goes, rogue cop. I was fucking dying. I was like, rogue cop? I've fucking known you for 25 years. I've never heard you say that once. Why rogue cop? And he goes, I can't play by their fucking rules. So I was like, that's adorable. I talked to him after the show. I was like, that was funny. He goes, that was true. It's fucking what he really always saw himself as, a rogue cop. So I was sitting there looking at the work we were going to do the next day, and I was going to cut the Garmin shit because he was no longer Commissioner Garmin, just start the scene in the room with the girls. And then I remembered that fucking, you know, rogue cop thing. So I said, you know, I could really make this motherfucker's dream come true with a few keystrokes. So I simply changed the fucking part from cop to rogue cop. And I set the sides in. They printed them up. And the next morning, I told Jason that night, I texted him. I was like, dude, I found a part for you. Come in tomorrow. He's like, yay. So he comes in the fucking next day, and I was hiding behind my monitors and shit, just waiting, watching, because I knew he'd fucking flip. And people were like, Jay, you're in the show today. And he's like, yeah. And he grabbed his sides, and he goes to the fucking chair with his name on and shit, and sits down. And this was his exact reaction. He flips through the sides, which is a miniature version of the script for the scenes you're shooting that day. Flips through them, and he goes... And he fucking finds me, and I stand up here on the monitor. I go, rogue cop! So Parks will definitely be back for sure, man. We just lost him because of illness this time around, but he'll be back for sure.
Can I get that handshake?
Oh, my God, absolutely. Thank you for coming all the way, man. Pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Hey.
I was just wondering, I know you're really busy, you know, with Buckaroo Banzai and all that. You're working on
everything.
The movie I'm wondering about is Hit Somebody. Are you still planning to do it?
And the hockey miniseries Hit Somebody is now getting easier and easier to make because of shit like Buckaroo Banzai, because of doing Flash. Now, like, suddenly I'm in TV world and people are like, hey, what do you want to do? And, you know, apparently I burned the bridges in movie world and shit. So in TV world, they're like, you're exciting to us still. So at this point, I've been using that to put a lot of things in motion. Buckaroo Banzai was something that found me after The Flash. But once I got into business with those folks, like, I started talking about, like, I got this other thing that I really want to do. So I started having a discussion with them about Hit Somebody. Like, for years, it was impossible to do. Nobody was fucking interested. Tried to do it as a movie. Couldn't get a hockey movie made. Tried to do it as a miniseries. Couldn't find a home for it. At one point, Hulu was going to do it, but then they didn't have enough loot and shit and said no and passed. At one point, the CBC was going to finance it, and I was going to become Canadian in order to do it. I've always wanted to be a dual citizen, so I was like, all right, this will be the fucking moment. I'll become half Canadian, and they'll give me free money to make the miniseries. Then I felt bad. I had an about face because I was, that's shitty. I'm becoming Canadian to take money away from other Canadian artists who really need it. I could fucking go out, and if I put my nose to the grindstone, I could probably find loot for it. So I said, all right, I won't become Canadian. I won't take their loot. I'll fucking still find a way to do it. And it's been really, really tough. But now, because of like what's going on with me and TV, suddenly people are like, let's talk about that thing. So my prediction is at this point is I feel like within the next 2 years, we're going to have it set up someplace. Because I've already had a bunch of people go like, can I read the scripts? And so now in TV world, I've made some headway. It's been kind of fucking interesting, to say the least. But there was a day that I realized that like I'm never going to get this done as a movie, I reached out to, I was bored one morning. Sometimes I'm a wake and baker, so I get up, and sometimes I just push whimsy or go like, what do I want to do today? And I was real frustrated with trying to get Hit Somebody made. So I said, let me reach out to somebody who loves fucking hockey in this business. Maybe he can help. Jerry Bruckheimer, the guy who made the pirate movies and stuff like that, Top Gun and shit like that, made CSI for years on TV. Massive hockey fan, plays hockey on the weekends. So I said, I'm going to fucking reach out to this guy. But I didn't want to go through my agent. I wanted to see if I could get to him without going through the proper channels. So I called up the main office at Jerry Bruckheimer Productions. And I've known him. I went back a few years with the dude. I after Chasing Amy, he loved Chasing Amy, he hired me to do a draft of Coyote Ugly, this movie that they made. So I worked with him for a little bit, man. And he has this amazingly long desk. Never seen anything like it. Desk as wide as this room with a chair that just goes back and forth across it. And he sets up, like, speed dating meetings, essentially. And meets here, meets here, meets here. And then people just one by one leave this desk. And the room's so large that, like, even if you're at the end of it, you don't hear the other fucking meeting. It's fucking nuts. So this dude, I said, I'm going to reach out to fucking him. I call the number, Jerry Bruckheimer Productions, like, you know, 411, you can get the number. And the lady answers. She goes, Jerry Bruckheimer Productions. I said, hey, this sounds weird, but is Jerry Bruckheimer there? And she goes, may I ask who's calling? I said, this is Kevin Smith. And she goes, okay, what is this regarding? And I was like, a hockey movie? And she goes, okay, hold on. And she puts me on hold. And when they put you on hold at Jerry Bruckheimer's office, the hold music is music from Jerry Bruckheimer films. So it was just like, don't want to close my eyes. I was listening to fucking the Aerosmith song from Armageddon, thinking of Ben whipping crackers down Liv Tyler's blouse and shit. And all of a sudden, the lady comes back on. She goes, what is this regarding? And I said, hockey movie? And she goes, and how do you know Jerry? I was like, oh, I worked for him a few years ago on Coyote Ugly. And she goes, oh, okay, hold on. She puts me on hold and says, take my breath away. Listen to that for a while. And then she gets back on. She goes, Mr. Smith, what did you do on that movie? Did you say craft service? And I said, no, I did a draft of the movie. I was a writer. And she goes, oh, all right, hold on. So at this point, I'm like, all right, fucking now, you know, recognize. I'm about to get put on the phone with Jerry Bruckheimer and shit. She comes back on. She goes, Mr. Smith, would you mind sending your question in written form to us? Which I was like, at this point, all right, they don't fucking know who the fuck I am. Don't matter. I'm just some random calling up and shit. So I was like, yeah, totally. Where should I submit it? And she goes, the email address is maindesk@jerrybruckheimer.com, which is like the just garbage file. So I was like, all right, thank you. And I took the address and hung up and shit. So I wrote an email. And to that email address, I was like, Jerry, it's Kevin Smith. We worked together on Coyote Ugly a long time ago. Big fan, long time listener, first time caller. I've got this hockey thing I would love to ask you a question about. Here's my number. If you get a chance, hit me back. And I just sent it. And I was like, let's see how long, if ever, it takes for that dude to get back to me. And I was betting never, but if he did, minimum 2-3 weeks, something like that. 22 hours later, man, I open up my email and he goes, Kevin, why the fuck would you email me at frontdesk@jerrybruckheimer.com? Why didn't you just go through your agent? And I called him and I was like, I don't know, I was just bored. I wanted to see if I could do it without my agency to see like how far I could push it and stuff. And he goes, you smoke far too much weed. And I said, anyway, I was writing you about Hit Somebody. This thing I wanted to do is a movie. Now it's two movies and shit. It turned into like a A and a B, a home and away, it was called. I said, it's pretty vast. And really, I'm not looking for help because I know you got your own thing going on. But I know you love hockey and you know movies. So like, I would love it if you read it, maybe gave me some advice and stuff. He goes, oh my God, send it, of course. So I sent him the script, which was a big like movie script at that point, since become TV scripts. So I sent it to him, and he wrote me back within a week and was just like, call me, let's talk. And I was excited because I was like, oh shit, maybe he's going to help me get it made. So I called him up, and he goes, Kevin, this is the best thing you've ever written. He's like, I've seen everything you've done, and hands down, this is the best thing you've ever written. I was like, thanks, man. I was like, do you think there's anybody out there that, like, where could I go with this? And he goes, well, I'm going to be honest with you. He goes, I have a movie about a hockey enforcer. Based on a real-life story that I've held the book rights for 10 years. and it's about a $65 million movie, and I can't get it made at Disney. And I was like, you made all those pirate movies for them. You made so much money for them with the pirate movies that they were able to buy both Star Wars and Marvel. Like, that's fucking massive, man. He goes, I know, but nobody believes in a hockey movie. He's like, and that's saying something. If I can't get that done at Disney, he's going, that just tells you the climate out there for this kind of thing. So I was like, all right, good to know, man. And we made a date to have lunch, and that was that. So I hung up, and I remember thinking, if Jerry Bruckheimer, that guy who made all the Pirates movies and all the CSIs, can't get a fucking hockey movie made, there's no way on earth that I could get a fucking hockey movie made, man. And that was when Jay Muse was like, well, don't make a hockey movie, make it a miniseries. He's like, I watch a lot of TV, man. I love it when they just stretch it out. He's going, they do movies on TV now. This is a couple years ago. And suddenly I was like, oh, my God, out of the mouth of babes, another vermin. What a great idea. So I turned it from one script into a larger script, man. And then, you know, it wasn't any easier getting a hockey miniseries made. But now that I've kind of put a foot firmly in TV and they've invited me back and now I'm taking out other TV shows and shit like that, now it feels like this is the time where I'm actually going to be able to get it done. The only bad part about that is that Alan Rickman was meant to be the narrator of the whole thing. And that was fucking heartbreaking. Like, it didn't say narrator in it. In the story, it would say Alan Rickman. So whenever somebody broke in to narrate the story, because it was kind of like, you know how Raising Arizona has H.I. McDonough doing the running narration? This was more of an omniscient narrator, like a Christmas story. So he was throughout the whole flick. He had a lot of dialogue. And anytime he spoke, there it was in the script, Alan Rickman. So, of course, when he passed, I was like, shit. Like, another one. I missed a great fucking opportunity, man. Because he knew about it, too. He's like, he called me one day. He goes, Kevin, so many people ask me about some hockey thing we're supposed to be doing. What is it? You know. I sent him scripts, and he loved it and stuff. And it was heartbreaking when he passed. Not only was that dude an amazing actor, as we all know, but he was such a, like, good dude. Such a wonderful, warm dude. Like, he was only in one movie with us. We tried to put him in almost everything. He was always busy and stuff. But even though he was just in Dogma, he, like, loved us and stayed in our world all the time. He would always call and ask about Jason and Harley and stuff like that. And he loved the fan base. Like, he would go to my shows. Whenever I did shows like this in the UK, he would go. And afterwards, he was like, I love your fans. They all know who I am. And they love to take pictures with me. So he was a big fan of that. And like, I remember I did a show at the O2 Arena in London. And after the show, I was driving back into the city. And him and his lady went, Rima, who later on became his wife. They've been together for like four decades or some such shit since they were in high school. Or college, really. I think that's when they met, right after high school. So they came to the show, and then afterwards we drove back to the city with them, and they were like, we must take you out to the lunch. And I was like, yeah, okay. It was nighttime and shit. So as we were driving, Alan goes, I want you to know I bought an apartment in New York finally. And I was like, holy shit, because he'd been talking about it for years, about wanting to commit to owning land in New York and stuff, because he did theater there all the time, but he always, you know, went to hotels, so he wanted to own his own place. So he's like, I finally bought an apartment in New York. And I was like, congrats, that's awesome. And he goes, it's in the same building as Ray Fiennes. And I said, well, that's really sweet, man. You live next to somebody you know. And he goes, I don't know how sweet it is. It's dangerous. And I said, why? And he goes, because if those Harry Potter fans find out that Voldemort and Snape live in the same building, they're going to bring it to the ground. He was so wonderful, that dude, man. Like, really, really wonderful. And it was heartbreaking when he passed, not just because, oh, my God, he was so excellent at his job. Like, he was an actor that other actors talked about. Like, he was an actor that Affleck would not stop talking about. He's like, that dude's a genius, dude. He figures out a way to say things nobody else has ever figured out, that elocution. It's just like he's a trailblazer in terms of, like, performance. People like him, Malkovich, fucking Depp, you know, Bill Murray. These are people that, like, no matter what they do, you're like, oh my God, you guys are chameleons, you're wonderful and stuff. So he was one of those cats, man. And he was, you rarely meet people that are that exceptional at their jobs. He was absolutely fucking genius at what he chose to do, his craft, performance. But that being said, as brilliant as he was at being an actor, he was an even better person. Like, he was just a good guy, real good guy, cared about people, was really interested. Can't be an actor that good at your job if you're not, like, a detail freak for human nature. And he liked getting inside people's heads in a good way, man. It's sad to lose him, not just because, fuck, we won't see another Alan Rickman performance, but, like, there aren't enough people like that in the world, period. To lose one really fucking sucks. So when we do it, it'll be dedicated to him. We got to figure out somebody else to voice it. I thought about recently Stan Lee, and then Jason Mewes goes, Stan is 93. He's going, you need to pick a younger narrator, man. So we'll see what happens here. Good?
Thank you. And I guess that's about all the time we have. So remember what I always say, don't diss what you hate, promote what you love. You know why? Because listening to the Longbox Guys is like
drunk history, but for comic books.
Oh, there wasn't an awkward pause there at all.
I pack my clothes and grab my single issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collection's complete.